This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Chris Buckley. How are you, Chris?
Good, thank you. How are you, Chris?
I'm very good, Chris. Actually, where I live, my next door neighbour's called Chris. My neighbour across next door to him is Chris. So there's a row of Chris's.
Yeah.
But anyway, we've been talking. Oh, you're from Vineworks?
Yes. Yeah, the business director at Vineworks.
Business director at Vineworks. But your main role is establishing vineyards or working with people to establish vineyards.
Correct.
The first week we talked about getting your piece of land. Last week we were talking about planting your piece of land.
Yep.
What's the next step?
Like we talked about last week, planting, establishing and getting all the trellising in. The next stage is the onerous job of looking after it. So it's taking it from baby vine, you know, all the way to a fruiting plant. This is where all the hard work and the labour of intensive work kind of comes in, really. So you would appoint a company like us to manage it on your behalf or with you. You can offer different packages that kind of support you in that way. Or you could look to appoint your own vineyard manager yourself. So you go out and look for an employee. Or you do it yourself, you know, if you're small enough or you've got the knowledge and the expertise and the willingness to do it, that's an option as well. To manage the vineyard, you're going to need some basic pieces of machinery. So you're going to need a vineyard tractor. You're going to need a mower. You're going to need some means of controlling the weeds under vine. So that would be a mechanical weeding implement of some description. You'd also need a fungicide sprayer as well to apply your plant protection products. And you would need a trimmer as well. And depending on your size, something like a deleafer or defoliator, which helps remove leaves at the canopy. You don't need to necessarily get all of these pieces of equipment. There are contractors out there that come and do the job for you. So it depends, yeah, which route you want to go, really. If you want to kind of do it yourself or keep it in-house, or if you want to kind of outsource that cost to somebody else. The cost difference is broadly the same in terms of, you know, outsourcing it versus sort of keeping it in-house.
Let's talk tractors for a
moment.
Yeah, go on. Do you need a specific type of tractor? I've seen things that seem to straddle the vine, and I've seen things that go up the rows.
Yeah.
And I've seen tractors, things with mechanical things going off it and hydraulic things going off it, you know. I mean, there's more types of tractors than there seems to be types of cars out there.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's a bit of a minefield, particularly if you're new to the scene. You very rarely see straddle tractors here in the UK. I mean, as a business, we own one, but that's a mechanical harvester. And for harvesting reasons, it needs to straddle. Ordinarily, we don't tend to see those yet. They're more common in kind of large wine-producing regions and areas where they're covering greater ground and the vineyard tends to be a lot bigger. What you need from a vineyard tractor is sort of, depending on your size and if you've got, you know, steep slopes, a decent amount of kind of horsepower punch. So it might be, you know, sort of 70 horsepower. It needs to have a cab on. So if you're applying fungicides and spraying, you need to have a cab on the tractor. You don't want a cabless tractor, otherwise you're into wearing chemical suits and respirators and all that kind of stuff, and make for a quite a miserable job. But so you want a cab with a tractor
with air conditioning,
with air conditioning and the newer
stereo.
Yeah, exactly. And the newer styles of cabs now are they're what called positive pressure. So they so when you open the doors,
pushes out.
There's all sorts of safety things being built in. So you want a tractor with a cab. You need a kind of a relatively good level of hydraulic oil flow as well. So if you're going to be operating mechanical implements like trimmers and undervine weeders, there's usually some sort of mechanical operation to them. So they'll need, you know, some bit of oil flow. It needs to be narrow enough to fit down your rows. The biggest mistake you can make is purchasing something which is too big for what you're trying to squeeze down.
Yeah, you almost need to have the row spacing decided with the tractor in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the UK, it's somewhere around 2.2 metres is the standard width. And most fruit and vineyard tractors will fit down that. The closer you get to the vines, obviously, you're going to have your wheelings or your tyres running along that route zone, really. So it's to be avoided. You want to purchase something or acquire something that's narrow enough that it's going to be safe and, you know, able to operate but not compromise what you're actually trying to do, which is grow vines and cultivate.
Is weight an issue? Because, you know, we've talked about compaction and it's in my head a lot, compaction. You know, I've seen some pretty big tractors out there and there must be a big range in weight.
They're all generally the same. Okay. Yeah, particularly in the vineyards kind of world. They're generally all the same in terms of kind of weight and configuration. Things that would add weight to them would be adding implements on.
Mm.
So if you were to add a sprayer hitched onto the tractor, you would be adding weight onto that. So you might get problems with compaction doing that.
And just out of curiosity, we've talked about buying the tractor now that we've got the vineyard established, but you used a tractor to establish the vineyard. Is it a different...
It's a different thing, yeah. Yeah. The ground preparation is...
Big, meaty tractor.
It is, yeah. It's an arable operation, essentially. So it's big 200 horsepower pieces of kit, you know, with the oomph to rip deep down.
Yeah, Jeremy Clarkson's Lamborghini.
Exactly, exactly. It's a Caleb type of job.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, not the little tractors we need.
No, exactly, yeah. Little tractors you need would be kind of narrow, compact tractors.
Okay. You've mentioned spraying, trimming. I think of trimmers like a
hedging, you'd call it, yeah. So it's taking the top of the canopy and just keeping that in check.
Yep. Didn't talk about harvester.
Maybe not. Yeah, it depends on, you know, where your fruit's going, what you're going to do with it,
how big your vineyard
is. Yeah.
Okay, so I've got my toys.
Yep.
I've spent a fortune on toys. How much does all those toys cost typically?
Depending on what you buy, obviously, it can range. A new vineyard tractor might be £60,000, for example, for a kind of a basic to decent sort of model. And that can go kind of, you know, northwards up to 100 plus for the top of the range versions, really. But depending on your size, you could equally get away with a second-hand piece of kit, which might be half or a fraction kind of that price, really.
And the tractors get measured just for second-hand. They get measured by the hours they've been operating.
They do, yeah. So it's as opposed to cars, where it's kilometres or miles, tractors they run on hours.
Yep. It's like the same as boats and planes, really.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So if you're looking at something, you know, north of 5,000 hours, you're talking at something that's quite a fair amount on the clock.
Okay, 5,000 hours is a lot.
Yeah, it's had a good life. But it's not to say, you know, if it's been well looked after, and depending on, you know, the model and brand and stuff, these things can go on for a long, long time, definitely.
Okay. All right, so we've bought our toys.
Got your toys?
Yeah. What's next?
Whoever's going to do it. So you've either appointed someone or you're going to do it yourself or
hired a vitty guy.
Vineyard manager. You would also appoint an agronomist as well. This is the individual that's going to help you times during the season, or basically put together a spray program to help you mitigate your disease, your pests, and help you interpret soil analysis over the course of...
Oh, so an agronomist does disease and spraying?
Well, they'll make your recommendations and you'll be able to buy your products through either that individual or that company. So you'd also need one of those... an individual like that on board as well.
Is that a bit dodgy? The person who recommends the stuff is the person who sells it to you. Shouldn't you get
there's independence available and then you can buy your chemicals through regular kind of outlets and means and stuff. So yeah, no, there's plenty out there.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've got all those, you're then kind of set to manage your vineyard, and this will involve pruning, depending on the year, bud rubbing, so that's removing all the shoots, unwanted shoots below the fruiting wire, also called water shoots. Other labour operations will be lifting wires.
Just people talk about lifting wires, and I've seen people do it in Marlborough with Sauvignon Blanc.
The catch wires, yeah.
Why are you lifting
wires?
Why
are you doing it? So you're doing it to capture the foliage. So as the vine grows and the leaves and the canes and the new growth extends, as it begins to bow or overhang, you want to catch that, push it up. So in a vertical shoot positioning, the main aim is to create vertical shoots.
Yeah.
And so by doing that at well-timed intervals, you will capture that growth and keep it going nice and straight. And therefore, when your canes are straight, it then leads into your bunches being neatly arranged, and therefore they're in a nice position. They're not touching each other, and they're, you know, what you call the fruit zone. So you do that periodically, depending on how many wires you got, a couple of times throughout the year.
So the wires, just in my mind, just so you can correct it, is it that you've got these wires that are off to the side and a row of them, and then you just pull them in, and or is it one wire that you just bring in and lift up?
Pair, so they're on opposing sides of the post.
That's right, yeah.
Before the growing season, you drop them down so that they're 20 centimetres or so above ground. Mm-hmm. And then as you go along, you lift wire one, that pair of wires in the opposing, and then you lift them up, get them together, and then the next pass will be wire two, and wire three, and so forth. So you're capturing...
How many wires are there?
Between two and three.
Oh, okay, okay. I see. It's not one pair of wires you're lifting. It's different pairs of wires.
Different pairs, yeah.
Keep it wedged
in. Keep it wedged in, so you keep that nice sort of vertical, almost like a hedge.
Yeah.
So it keeps you nice and sort of thin, kind of neat and narrow.
And these wires, do they run the full length of the...
They do. Yeah.
So they must be pretty heavy to lift.
No, they're 2 mil thickness. They're uber light. No, very, very light wires.
Okay. And how do you lift them? Do you just...
Just by hands, yeah. Gloves on and just... just lift it up. Just capturing it in, really.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a lot of walking, but it's a relatively straightforward.
And you lift it segment by segment, or the whole row at one person's
height? Yeah, ideally you want people on opposing sides, so you're almost facing someone, and you lift it, and there'll be hooks on the post, and you drop it into the hook. Depending on how much has grown, you want to match where you're going to hook the wire into to what the growth has been.
Yeah.
And you just, yeah, enough to kind of capture it, so it's secure in, and it's not going to blow out or fall out mm-hmm. the next time you come to do
okay.
it.
Okay, so we're lifting out wires.
Lifting your wires, and then the other labour operations would be leaf stripping, so you can go through and do that by hand. Mm-hmm. You can also do that potentially by machine, but depending on the size of the vineyard or access to labour. Leaf strip that fruit zone, so you'd start on the kind of east side, do that, and then you'd come back later on and do the west side before harvest of raisin. So effectively, by the time you come to harvest, you've got both sides stripped. This helps for airflow, reduce disease pressure, reduce pests, and help with ripening as well.
What do you do east first, then west?
The sun rises in the east, so that morning sunlight helps to dry off the fruit zone first.
Why don't you just do them both at roughly the same time?
You can do them both. We like to maintain a little bit of leaf coverage, just to prevent too much sort of sunburn in the first instance. I know it's a funny thing to talk about in the UK, but it does happen.
Yeah.
Ordinarily, you kind of don't want to do it too quickly and too fast. Mm-hmm. Do one side and expose that, and then allow the fruit to kind of build up a little bit, and then do the other side in a pass not too long after.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Next stage after that is harvest.
Oh, happy days.
Yeah, so you've got this beautifully exposed fruit. It's all lovely and ripe. You're ready to pick. You know where it's going. You've got your transport all lined up. Yeah, you've got get your pickers together and kind of away you go, really. Pick into small crates or into kind of Dolav-style bins, which are those kind of big sort of fruit bins that hold a couple of hundred kilos, which are much more popular and efficient. Advise you to get them rather than the small crate.
But don't you get more crushing and then...
Don't, no, because they're relatively shallow.
Okay.
They're like a big pallet-sized bin.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the depth of them is kind of 40, 50 centimetres. So you don't get much crushing at all, really. Okay. But you're able to kind of fit a lot more fruit in and it can be forklifted out. Mm. So in terms of loading onto a lorry, when it gets to the winery, it can be tipped on a rotating tipper as well. So it makes it much more efficient than hand-dealing with small... crates holding.
That's hand harvesting, but
hand harvesting, and then we could also do machine harvesting as well.
The way I describe machine harvesting, and you can tell me, right, I think of it as like some conveyors at the bottom, and a thing that grabs the machine, shakes the bejeebers out of it, and the fruit just falls off onto the conveyors, and they go off into a hopper or something.
You're not too far off. So there's effectively a series of paddles or beaters that vibrate and move from side to side, and they're the ones that shake the trellising of the vine, and those are very, very sensitive. So there's different settings that you can set those to run at. Obviously harder will shake it, vibrate it more, and obviously less. Depending on the variety, the fruit, the ripeness, you kind of play around to get that to the optimum perfection, really. But that will shake the berries off. And like you say, there's a set of conveyors which it will drop onto, and those go up. They're met by kind of a series of fans and screens, so that will help remove leaves and any kind of other mog.
I was going to say meta other than grapes.
Yeah, and there's, you know, magnets. So if there's a small chance a clip or something has come off, you know, the magnets will capture that and it will go into a hopper, a holding hopper. So when the machine gets to the end of the row, it will then slowly tip that hopper into like a Dolav style bin.
Okay. And how much fruit do you lose left on the vine? You know, do you get every grape or some grapes a little bit more resistant to coming off?
If it's a little bit resistant, then it's probably not ripe, kind of harder and fixed on. So it will take everything. So it's quite key to keep your vineyard relatively clean in terms of disease if you're machine harvesting, because you do run the risk of that being incorporated kind of into the mix. Mm-hmm. What we've done for this year is separating the juice and the grapes in field. So we have a trailer that we...
A press.
Not press, but when the harvester gets to the end of the row, we can tip into this trailer and it has a full screen at the bottom.
Yeah.
And it immediately separates the juice, your free run juice, which we decant into an IBC and we can sulfur up.
IBC?
It's a food grade container, holds like 1,000 litres. Been doing that this year for several clients.
And that's to avoid oxidation?
Yeah, avoid oxidation. And then the rest of the grapes is then augured into like a big Dolav style bin. So you'll have effectively dryish grapes. You know, there might be a little bit of juice at the bottom, mm-hmm. and then an IBC of free run juice to go with it. So it's helping to kind of raise that quality really. Rather than, because you'll have seen pictures and stuff of, you know, these hoppers tipping grapes and it's, you know, it's like a soup of juice and grapes really. So us at Vineworks kind of eke out the kind of best quality out of that situation really.
And do you see people putting sulfur powder on the grapes as
Yeah, you do. So if it's going long distance on bins, people add sulfur to machine harvested fruit. If it's going cool then, and you know you're confident that it's going to be, you know, processed relatively quickly, then get away with it. Yeah, exactly.
Is it like a machine that is like a press that just runs along? You can just put your grapes in, press it, you get your juice out straight into a tank or anything like that? Or that?
Not in the UK.
Not in the UK.
I've seen it in Australia.
Yeah.
There's almost like field press systems.
Yeah.
They kind of follow the machine harvest around and they'll press the grapes there and then a spent mark just goes back into the corner of the field and they've got, you know, you've got your pressed, I don't know, Sauve or Chard or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But you see it on a very small kind of micro scale. I've seen that in Margaret River in Australia.
Yeah.
But, not here yet. Maybe that's a good business idea.
I have a 50% commission on that.
Yeah.
We've got our grapes harvested.
Yeah. Now on to the next season.
Next season, yeah, because it is really, isn't it? We should have started with winter pruning almost. It's our first crop, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what happens? The vines will then just sit there. They slowly lose their leaves.
Well, they do, yeah, exactly. So once cold weather sets in, your leaves begin to drop off and the vine goes into dormancy and all the carbohydrates go back into the plant, into the root and into the trunk,
yep.
Ready for the next growing season. So pruning, probably one of the most important jobs of the year. It will influence pretty much every operation that you do thereafter. Mm-hmm. It will set your yield. It will influence your canopy management. It will help you reduce disease because it help you moderate how much fruit you've got on the vine, etc. It's the most important thing you'll do. In the UK, it's VSP system is typically and very successfully used, so that single and double geo.
Yeah, that's replacement cane.
It's replacement cane, exactly. So each year you'll be looking at what canes are available and choosing the healthiest, strongest looking cane and best positioned as well. It's something you can't teach overnight. It takes a few pruning seasons for the guys to get fully up to scratch on that really. Depending on the kind of vigour, you might be leaving just a single cane, so a single geo, or if you're quite a vigorous site, then you might convert that to double geo.
And the idea of being vigorous site is
the more buds you leave, the more foliage, the more plant that's growing.
But Burgundy, they often have the vines really close together.
They do, to compete with each other.
To compete with each other, yeah. So double geo would imply what? You've got more space almost, and it's a vigorous site.
If you think of that fruiting wire as just a long piece of string, you're utilising that piece of string in double geo just more efficiently. You're covering that in cane and ultimately buds and fruit.
Cool, and that's your winter job done.
Yeah, you tie it down, so you tie down the canes, and then you kind of you're waiting, praying that the season doesn't get going too early, and you've got a frost risk.
That's true. Yeah. You got to watch out for frost.
Yes.
Okay. All right then, Chris. I think we'll wrap it up there.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.